At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's Power Hour, LSU.
Brian Kelly does me so daggum much that I have to give him credit for one of the worst coaching decisions of his career. He owns up to it, and at the same time says something that is very critical, that the math was wrong. Listen, if you're watching this right now, understand that you are a diehard LSU football fan, super diehard. You are watching me, my chubby Bruno Mars looking ass, telling you about what is wrong with LSU football and what is right with LSU football. You are a diehard. You know this team better than some of the national analysts know this team. And when I did my Garrett Nussmeier film study over the weekend, and when I went on different shows talking about the game going into this past weekend, gained some followers, really happy to do that. Many people said to me, hey, Carter, how could Garrett Nussmeier slice up Clemson? That was the title of my film study over the weekend. How could he do such a thing? Well, the math was wrong. The stat line didn't look impressive. The QBR, there were better QBRs in the SEC last week, including Marcel Reed, who put up a 92. Garrett was in the 80s. The math was wrong. That was one of the best quarterback performances you will see. Understanding the situation and time, especially if you exclude Joe Burrow and Jaden Daniels from the equation, that's up there. One of the all-time great LSU QB performances, knowing what we were up against. And always remember, it's more difficult to play at a high level at any position in a season-opening game. So even though his stat line wasn't great, he was robbed of the Barry and Brown touchdown, and so on and so on and so on, the math was wrong. Brian Kelly's decision to go for it on 4th-and-2, the math was wrong. So here's what he had to say, and we'll play some Brian Kelly clips a little bit later. For some reason, when I play BK audio early in streams, my YouTube line goes down. I don't know why that's the case. Maybe because a lot of you have already seen the clip. But Brian Kelly said that the analytics told him to go for it on 4th-and-2. And what I took away from that at the time, I tweeted it out during the timeout that he took. I also said this during the live stream during my cursing tirade, that the math probably told him to go for it. Now, why would the math do such a thing? Well, it's simple. A lot of analytical fourth down bots, and I've been very fortunate to see some that the NFL uses, some college analytical models that they use. Every single model is calibrated for how you should go about winning the game. And the model is probably right. Anytime you are losing by 7 on the road versus an elite team, you are in a lot of trouble. And you should take advantage of when you're in the red zone to try and score a touchdown. So the model is telling Brian Kelly, hey, if we kick a field goal, you're still going to need to score a touchdown at some point to win this game or to take the lead. So on 4th and 2, that's why I would tell him to go for it. But the model is telling Brian Kelly to do that for you to win the game. And in that spot, logic would tell you, even though a touchdown drastically increases your chances of winning the game, the field goal is the practical thing to do. It is the practical thing to do. Okay? Think about it this way. The best thing to do in that situation would be to score a touchdown. But let's say you are driving a long distance and you're driving from Louisiana to Dallas. And your gas tank says it is 100 miles to empty, all right? And the next Buc-ee's is 95 miles away. Well, your model tells you you can make it. You can make it with 5 miles to spare. But the rational person would tell you, hey, let's just fill up at the next ET relay or mobile or wherever, and then we could still go to Buc-ee's. We could still score that touchdown later. So what did Brian Kelly say today? It was his fault. He took full ownership of the model failing him. And that is something that you should always take away in life. The math isn't always going to be right. This is not a game played by calculators. And then it lends us to what I believe is the major point from this game's or this weekend's game. And then we'll get more into more Brian Kelly comments. First off, I want to thank each and every one of you. This was wild. I didn't expect this. I changed up how I did my film studies this weekend, and we will be doing this from this point forward. We'll be doing 2 film studies on Sundays from this point forward. And I released a Blake Baker film study at 8 in the morning on Saturday, I would be kind of crazy. But Sunday, I released it, and guess what? It was the most viewed film study in Power Hour LSU history. The single most viewed, by a wide margin now. I don't know why that's the case, but I really do appreciate it. I felt like I got some plays wrong. You always do when you do these things, especially if you're doing the film study right after the game. And I really do appreciate y'all's support. I really, really, really do. And then we did a film study later that night, and it did well as well. And that was more so the Garrett Nussmeier long-form live viewing session. So we're going to switch some things up with film studies. I know a lot of you wanted to go live on Sunday, so I just want to say thank you on that. Okay. This is something else that I want you to take with you moving forward in life. And it hit me like a ton of bricks watching LSU this weekend. College football and all major sports is about the weak link. Now, in entertainment, in a lot of different forms of entertainment, weak links aren't all that important. They really aren't. If you were to go see Dave Matthews tonight at Red Rocks, and let's say the side guitarist, one of the guitarists, didn't show up, and then the backup guitarist got sick, and then they're down to their third string guitarist, the show is probably still going to be awesome. Gal Gadot cannot act. The movies are still great. All of them that she's in, they're still great. Most of them. Good script, other good actors, so on and so on. Sports used to not be like that. But now, since sports is so analytically focused, And we are so good in all sports at attacking weaknesses. If you're an NBA fan, you know this. If you're an MLB fan, you know this. If you're a hockey fan, you know this. Football's starting to get like this as well, especially college football. It is all about your weak links. Now, here's the thing. You can get away with one weak link, and basically that means one bad player. You can get away with that. You cannot get away with it at too many positions. It's impossible. It's impossible. You simply cannot get away with too many weak links. So what was the story of LSU last year? They had too many weak links on the field. And they were replaced by some strong links, like Mansoor Delane. And they're replaced by some very, 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 very good links, like Braylon Moore, SEC Offensive Lineman of the Week. And you had some strong links replaced by other strong links. Patrick Payton and Jack Pyburn replacing Savion Jones and Braden Swenson. The truth is, as mad as we were about Bryce Underwood, LSU and Michigan both won the deal. So imagine if Bryce Underwood came in and we did not get our asses to the transfer portal. Our team for the future would be better served with Bryce Underwood taking over the reins from Garrett Nussmeier. But right now, we wouldn't have won the game if we did not have Braylon Moore or Mansoor Delane. I really do feel like we needed both of them. They were that impactful in the game. Now, there's no need to harp on who they replaced. Because all offseason, you heard me live stream after live stream uncomfortably say, I think the biggest problem with LSU was that we had too many weak links. Way too many. And those guys are still on the team. And those guys played sparingly, very little versus Clemson. And I still want them to do great. I like both of those guys. But from this point forward, we know what the standard is at LSU. We know what the standard is. We cannot have weak links. We just can't. Defensive tackle. Do we beat Clemson without Bernard Gooden? Maybe so, but he almost made some big plays. Big, big, big plays. Kind of an underrated game. To me, he was by far our best defensive tackle, and it wasn't close. You know, I was able to get my hands on some All-22, and on top of that, obviously, our broadcast footage breakdowns, he was that good. I mean, he's got juice. He is a traditional three-technique playmaker. All right? And you watch out. I'm just telling you. So where were the weak links on LSU's team last year? Honestly, all four of the members of the secondary, including the nickel. So five. All five are better this year. Zy Alexander was very good in some games. I literally feel all five of the positions are better. PJ Woodland had one hell of a game. Some of his high school teammates commented under our film study. Welcome. We do have quite a few viewers, in the state of Mississippi, so welcome. So it really was a phenomenal performance defensively on so many different levels. But now there's a standard. You notice one thing about LSU? I don't care if you do a gazillion Instagram dances after we win. But what did Brian Kelly say leading into the game? They're adults. They are adults. They're grown-ass men. Okay, it would not surprise me if some of them are older than me. I'm kidding. But it was a professional defensive performance, and I do mean it. I think part of the reason why our viewership was so high was Blake Baker was really that good. Okay, and you know if there was one thing I was right about, and I did pick Clemson to win the game, but one thing I was right about is be patient with Blake Baker. Be patient. Let him get what he needs to get. It wasn't really a secret that LSU didn't have what we needed, and you could see it going into last year. So shout out to everyone that was out there and got the daggum job done for us, all right? Now we go to the offensive side of the football, You know, one thing that was brought up is the offensive line performance for LSU and how good they stepped up in this moment. You know, I thought it was a very good game plan. It wasn't a typical Joe Sloan called game. And I give him a lot of credit for dealing with the hand that he was dealt, right? It sucks as an offensive coordinator that you lose a three-year starter at offensive tackle. It sucks even worse when you lose two of them. But what do? We play quick. Garrett Nussmeier, low ADOT, 4.4. Time to throw, even lower than that. Now, all of that would go up, in particular the ADOT if the Barry and Brown touchdown counted. But, you know, well, actually, the ADOT would still be the same. So it's even crazier that his ADOT is that little. But there were some penalized throws that were taken back. You know, I keep going back to how good of a game that was from Joe. And, you know, the more I look and feel into that game plan, and notice I say feel into that game plan, sometimes when you're watching something, you're like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff here that we did not run last year. You have to put two and two together. I give Alex Atkins a lot of credit for bringing some creativity to the run game. Because, look, could Sloan have come up with some of those run concepts that we ran? Yeah, very well. But there were some in there that were so insanely creative that you would like to think that there were some outside forces helping us out there. And outside forces, I mean new coaches that are on the staff now. So I do think Alex Atkins deserves a lot of credit. The LSU offensive, the perimeter players for LSU blocked their asses off. That was something else that Brian Kelly brought up in the press conference. I'm just going to be honest with y'all. We were not good blockers last year on the edge. We brought that up plenty of times. It showed in particular in the Ole Miss game last year. And I think part of why our blocking on the edge was so clunky is their DBs were able to key our run game really well. So what did LSU do to combat that? Well, we did a good job motioning our receivers and giving them better angles to make their blocks. And we also got very creative with some of our trip formation runs, right? Creating overloads and rotating our receivers. Now, I go back to that Kyle Parker seal on the duo run with Caden going down the left side. That was, to me, one of the most erotic football designs I've ever seen. Earmuffs for everybody listening. But I needed a pillow. That's how happy I got. It was something I thought I would never see an LSU offense do. That's how sexy a play call design that was. Creating angles? Caden Durham not having to climb through 50 arms and legs? So, there you go. And I want to talk about guys like Kyle, guys like Donovan Green, who made those little blocks. To me, the most diverse game I've seen an LSU wide receiver play might have been Xavion Thomas. Drew a pass interference flag. Threw a pass that was caught. Three carries for 26 yards. Reception. A tackle. A punt return. He sold you popcorn at the gate. It was amazing. Okay. And it's funny how the more things change, the more things stay the same. Okay. So it has been so long since LSU played Clemson in the national championship game. It was 2019 LSU going up against 2019 Clemson. And you got to remember, Clemson was the defending national champions. They were undefeated. They had a strong-ass team. T. Higgins, are you kidding me? T. Higgins? Our next guest will tell you how good T. Higgins is. But it was funny, going into that game, everyone made a big deal that it was Joe Burrow versus Trevor Lawrence. Mano a mano, the two best quarterback prospects we could think of, going up against each other. But the truth is, in that game, it was the biggest gap in talent. It was Joe Burrow, who is one of the best college quarterbacks of all time, and Trevor Lawrence, who was very, 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 very good. So what happened this past weekend? Well, LSU versus Clemson, not as hyped of a matchup, but it was very hyped. Clemson this time was favored. You had two hyped up defensive lines, more so on the Clemson side of things. You had hyped up defenses, hyped up skill position guys. Clemson's offensive line, of course, had with all their guys back. But still, it was Garrett Nussmeier versus Cade Klubnik. What was the biggest gap and difference in the game? Garrett Nussmeier and Cade Klubnik. Okay? So, I've done film reviews on the LSU defense and the LSU offense. I haven't done an extensive review of Cade himself. But he was bad. He was bad. To me, he was bad. I do think, and I think this is important because I have been labeled the Blake Baker Glazer. He was phenomenal. He was the best coach on the field. But were there some yards left on the field by number two in the orange and purple? You betcha. There was plenty of yards left on the field. Why? Because he crumbled in the face of Garrett Nussmeier. Because Patrick Payton was in his passing lane. Because Bernard Gooden was making plays. Because Mansoor Delane was there. He was seeing ghost. You gave him a bunch of different looks that he thought he wasn't going to see. He lost one of his best receivers, which did hurt their game plan. He did leave yards on the field. Y'all, Garrett Nussmeier, if you were to ask most people going into that game, would you take Garrett or Cade? Most would say Cade. I'm serious. I would say probably 6 to 7 out of 10 would say Cade over Garrett. Now it's not a question. It's not a question. Garrett was that much better in this game. Okay? Now we're going to get to some of your comments. We just signed, really happy, a new deal with our friends at, I can't say enough good things. And I apologize to them profusely because they are men of the good book, as am I, for all my cursing during the halftime show. Oh, my goodness, Brian Kelly had me up at a tizzy. But Labor Therapy, we just signed another deal with them. Really excited. Labor Therapy, labortherapy.com. 5 different locations in the Lafayette region. Let's get to as many questions as we possibly can. You see, Sourdough Man has a little insignia next to his name. That's what you get with the PHL membership. Please hit the join button. Let's keep it going. LA Mom's happy we got a dub. There we go. Joseph, it's even better to see you. Alexander says, I want a Chris Hilton bounce back game. He's not out of it. He is not out of it at all. Jace Max, I want everyone to show Jace Max some love. He is the one that's making our short form content, and he's a part of the PHL fam for real. He is a part of the PHL mountain of talent that we have here, and we're going to get him on the channel pretty soon. Jace Max has got some takes. He came to the PHL get-togethers this past weekend, I'd say this past weekend, a month ago, in a Devin White Ravens jersey, but it wasn't a Devin White number 6. It was a Devin White number 48. I gotta hit up Devin and get Jace Max a new jersey. John Sibley, he says, we've got to turn the page to Louisiana Tech. Thursday night, we will have a guest from Louisiana Tech, friend of the channel, Mr. Ben. Can't wait. Alexander wants more Carius Kern. You will probably, wink, wink, nod, see him play this past weekend or this next weekend versus Louisiana Tech, who is a bad team. Okay, so just to give you an idea how bad they are, y'all, the LSU over-under in this game between LSU and the Texters is like 51. The point spread is 36. So what does that mean? Vegas is thinking this is going to be a 42-3 kind of game. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. All right. Oh, yeah, Patrick Queen. Why was I saying Devin White? Like, it's impossible for me to like a linebacker more than I like Patrick Queen. former PHL guest Patrick Queen. And speaking of guests, we got to go to our next guest. Let's get into some All-22. The man who we had on here a few months ago, who said Garrett Nussmeier is by far his QB1 alongside Kate Klubnik. Iron City Film, Mr. Drew, what's good, bud?
What's up, Carter? Glad to be back on here. Appreciate you having me on.
So you were on here a month ago. You're an All-22 film analyst. You grind the tape is what they say. Okay?
I like to think so.
You were like, Garrett Nussmeier and Cade are so far ahead of all the other QBs. Now, is it clear that there is a gap between the two?
Now, I had – see, I'm one of these people that's kind of against, like, the whole head-to-head QB matchup, like, narrative that comes out, because I think it's a very, like – it's an isolated thing. But I mean, if you're looking at it in a vacuum, I mean, Kate Klubnik got flat out outplayed like by country mile. It wasn't particularly close. And I, by the end of like my whole like summer scouting is usually what the like draft world term is. By the end of that, and I'd combed back through both QBs to make sure I wasn't being, you know, biased in either one. Nussmeier had kind of separated himself. Like he ended up as my QB1 by a little bit more of a margin, by the time it was all said and done heading into the season. But I think it just solidified it further by just seeing how much better Nussmeier was under, you know, that kind of pressure in week one. He flat out outplayed him by a lot.
So, and you know, there's always during the summer a sexy QB. And it was and because Garrett doesn't run, you know, people get enamored by like Fernando Mendoza, who has a little bit more juice with his legs. But for me, when I did my film review, I was like, Garrett's even better. There, you don't see the mistakes. He's carrying out the game plan. He's not extending plays when he doesn't need to. What really stood out to you in this Clemson game, looking at Garrett compared to maybe Garrett from last year?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'm not sure that I saw like a drastically different player in this game than I did on the 2024 tape. But to me, it was just kind of magnified because this was an incredibly hard, like this was the hardest situation to me of any quarterback in week one. Like it was, you're up against a stout, like one of the best in the country, Clemson defense, you know, away, not at home, first night game of week one, like first of the season, like you're in a really, really, really hard situation. And it, like, it just didn't faze him. He was poised the entire time. You see all of the great mental attributes that you see on tape, just shine through further in a high stakes situation like that. And I just, it didn't rattle him at all.
Yeah, I want to go through a few of these throws here. And you feel free, and I even do it in slow-mo here. I'll just let you talk through. I don't have the timestamps for it, but just walk us through what you're seeing whenever you watch him. LSU, obviously, in a 2x2, and you get a bit of emotion here. So I'm just going to let you take it. Iron City.
Again, I wish I had been a little bit prepared to live film breakdown here. The biggest thing here is you see, you know, if you want to go ahead and stop it real quick, just because I think at the beginning of the plays is where you can see the most impressive things from Nussmeier. It's just how you can see the gears turning in his head. There was a clip from Tom Brady that circulated here recently on Twitter, on Twitter, like about saying the newer generation of quarterbacks just aren't as mentally advanced coming into the league as they were back in Brady's era. I don't know if anybody's seen that. Which I agree with him. I think that's true. That a lot of times these dumbed down college offenses, like what you see from like a Jackson Dart coming out, or like any of the Ole Miss QBs or the Tennessee QBs, these really simple college schemes, these guys kind of get their growth gets stunted and they don't have to be as mentally advanced when they come into the league. But Nussmeier, I think, is one of the only guys I've watched that is just the complete opposite of that. I think Nussmeier right now is probably smarter than I would say a good half of the QBs in the NFL right now. Wow. I don't feel, you know, out of pocket saying that at all. Cause you just see like the pre-snap and post-snap processing is so quick. Also, I apologize for the glare. It's sundown here.
No, it's okay.
My lighting situation's a disaster. But he's just so smart for a QB of his age and the stage in his career. And you really get to see him correctly identify things from a down to down basis. And you see Clemson here, they disguised a lot of their coverages. Like this was a too high safety look pre-snap. They rotated into cover three. And it never really phases him. I did say one thing you want to say is improved from last year's tape to this. I thought he was much better under pressure in this game than he was last year. I thought that sometimes, you know, he's always been a poised QB, but I thought you would see it rattle him, you know, especially like interior pressure, which coming from a D line with Peter Woods to Monte Capehart, like that's going to happen. And I thought he was able to sit in there, hang in the pocket, and just deliver throws in the face of pressure a lot better in this game than I saw.
And it's interesting, before we get to this next play, you know, I got some things right about this game. The one thing is Garrett is just so good that he will raise the offensive line ahead of him. And that's one of my favorite things about him, because you normally think of that when it's a dual threat QB. You don't think of it at the college level when it's a pocket QB. And this is a great little check downer here to Caden.
Yeah. And you see like just the pocket collapsing right there. I'm going to get like, I know, I'm sure, again, I'm not in the LSU space as much as y'all are. I'm sure the offensive line is catching a lot of flack for this game, because obviously Garrett was under, you know, pretty consistent pressure throughout this entire game. But you got to remember, like, there's a ton, you've had so much turnover, you know, three guys leaving for the NFL on one offensive line, and you're coming in this environment against TJ Parker, DeMonte Capehart, Jeremiah Alexander, Peter Woods. Like, you've got, you know, probably two surefire first-round caliber defensive linemen and probably two more that'll go in the top 100-ish. So it's important to give this offensive line some grace for this first game. Like, this is as hard of a matchup as you can get, to me.
Ryan, you felt Parker actually played good in this game, right?
I thought he was good. I was a little bit disappointed. I expected a little bit more from him. I don't think he was bad in this game, but I didn't think he you know, it was like one of the best games I've seen from him on tape.
Man, I just love this throw, man. You just don't see college quarterbacks.
Yeah, this is probably my second favorite throw.
Yeah. Walk us through this, man.
This one is, I mean, again, I think the mental processing is pretty clearly his best trait. But I think this kind of goes hand in hand with that. It's just the anticipation. I brought this up on my show, you know, when I was on here a couple months ago. But that's another thing you just never see in QBs this young, is just being able to throw stuff open like this. And like, you've got three Clemson defenders right there when he's letting this ball go. That's a tiny window. You've got to let that, like, that is a picture perfect time to let that ball go. And it's right before he breaks. And Nussmeier, he's never late, but he's always on time. He just really knows how to throw into those windows that aren't there yet. And that just, that raises your ceiling and your floor as an NFL quarterback and as a college quarterback by so much. So just the ability to hit those windows really before they become windows. It's just, it's a feel thing that a lot of quarterbacks don't have. And it's something that Nussmeier has excelled at since he became a starter.
Yeah. Let's go through a few other things. You know, Monsoor Delane got a lot.
Oh my goodness.
I know you focus mostly on QBs, but what stood out to you from an NFL perspective?
Yeah, that was like, I haven't watched as much of the LSU defense yet as I wanted to, because there's so many guys on the defense I have to watch. I wanted to just time constraints, but I got through about three of them, and Delane was the first one I hit. Pound for pound, Delane was probably a top five football player that I watched this weekend on the field. Like, he was, that's damn near perfect cornerback play, what you saw in that game. Like, there was virtually nothing he did. Like, you couldn't point to a play where I thought he really screwed up. Like, he did his assignment through and through. He was virtually perfect technique in one-on-one man throughout the entire game. It was unbelievably impressive. And that was not a name I'd heard until this weekend, which is probably more on me being kind of slacking on my draft recently. But he was outstanding.
I like it. Yeah, I knew he was going to be good. I mean, I just had so many people that were at practice every day saying, this guy is like good. But it really hit me like a ton of bricks, like it did you, for him to be that good, that special. You know, one assistant GM told me he would have been a third round selection. But I think now he could easily work himself into that first, second round range.
If he continues to play like this, I mean, that's a top 10 pick, right?
Wow.
There. That one, like, if you're just taking a single sample size, single game sample size, like, that's a high first round corner right there. So if he's able to continue that level of play, I mean, that's a top in the country corner. And this is like, people don't give this Clemson receiver room enough credit, in my opinion. Like, it's, you've got Antonio Williams is the name getting all the credit right now, because he's going to be the guy that goes into the draft this year. And I think he's good. I'm not quite as high on him as some people are. But Bryant Wesco, the 2027 guy in that receiver room, is one of my favorites. And that already, you know, we talk about how loaded next year's receiver group is going to be, all these young freshman receivers last year that lit up the country. You know, you get hidden behind the Ryan Williams, the Jeremiah Smiths. Bryant Wesco is outstanding. He's a really, really, really good receiver. And again, like, Delane held his own against him all night, you know, and Antonio Williams, you know, obviously had that injury. But that's, you know, that's not a receiving core to laugh at. That's a really stout receiving core that Delane had his, you know, first game of the season and locked down.
Okay. I should have prepped you for this. And I'm going to be honest. I've not watched him play at all yet because, like you, I think people struggle when they look at someone as a football expert. You got to watch the film, and then you got to produce content surrounding it. So it's really hard to get to everyone.
Yes.
Did you watch DJ Lagway this weekend?
You know, I saw the highlight. It was a highlight catch, really, there, like the crazy one-hand catch from their freshman receiver over at Florida. But I just saw the throw. Like, Lagway was outstanding. I didn't get to watch his game this year or this past weekend because it was, they were playing kind of a nobody. But I did watch his tape from last year. And again, I think he's I couldn't be higher on him. I think he's, one of the best quarterbacks in the country for sure.
Okay.
But I think he's outstanding. But I know I didn't get to watch him this past weekend yet, unfortunately.
Okay. And then what about Sellers?
I did watch Sellers, at least not all the way through, but I watched most of the significant snaps. And I feel the same way about him now as I did from last year's tape, where the physical tools are really fun. He's going to have a highlight every time he runs the ball. Crazy arm talent, but it's just I don't think he has it between the ears yet. He's still too young and too raw developmentally. It's everything that Garrett Nussmeier has is what Sellers lacks. And it's just you got to be more mentally proficient for me to really be high on you as a quarterback prospect. And I just don't think Sellers is there yet.
I will say, as great as he was in this game this weekend versus Virginia Tech, that Virginia Tech defense is going to be nasty. I know they got an NFL DC, so that he was probably seeing a lot of things for the first time.
Yeah.
And it is the first game. That safety he took was inexcusable. Now, that was one of the worst safeties I can remember a high. It's not Orlovsky level, but it was bad. But man, dude, the runs are just insane. Dude, they're so insane.
He's one of the most gifted runners at the quarterback position I've ever watched, but only get you so far.
So, neutral perspective. I know you're mostly a Titans guy here.
Yeah.
How do you feel about LSU talent wise? I mean, do you think this is enough talent to win it all this year?
I mean, in the current state of college football, absolutely. I mean, I think, coming into this, to be honest, to own up to it and kind of eat crow here, Clemson was my national championship favorite going into the season. I thought Clemson was going to run the table. And LSU, I know it was 17-10, but it was really, I thought it was a lot less close than the box score reflected. Right. LSU controlled that whole game. So for them to come out and just manhandle my favorite for the national championship, I don't see how you could, write them off at this point. This is an extremely talented roster. And I know this is mainly a Nuss show, but I had two more quick defensive names to touch on. You mentioned both of these guys right before. And Harold Perkins is a guy we've talked about for a long time, since he was a freshman, obviously. But I just never saw a path for him to really be a true football player because he just floated around at a lot of different positions. His weight was never really where I thought it should have been. And he never looked comfortable at a certain position. This game is where I thought you really saw a comfortable Harold Perkins. He was really, really good this past weekend. I thought, you see him more in that mix between star and kind of more inside linebacker. I still don't think he's big enough to play that full time. But I thought he looked the most comfortable that I've ever seen him. He was really good. And a name that I had not heard that I saw you mention or heard you mention right before I got on here is Bernard Gooden. I mean, that guy, again, hadn't heard the name until I turned on this tape. I was watching Harold Perkins and just couldn't take my eyes off this defensive tackle who was wrecking everything. The play strength that Bernard Gooden has is unbelievable. That guy was, throwing double teams out of the club every other play. I had not heard him before this game. I was not familiar with his game. I probably should have been. But he had an outstanding game also. So just to quickly touch on him.
Yeah, you really just did the Shaquille O'Neal. I wasn't familiar with your game.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Iron City Film is where you can follow him. You do mostly Tennessee Titans breakdowns, but you also do some college breakdowns. Let me see you get to. Oh, okay. Hold on. I literally almost just put my DMs up on the screen. that would have absolutely. Well, I wouldn't say in my career. I would have gotten a few nasty calls regarding that. But Iron City Film is where you can follow him, at Iron City Film. Okay, so here we go. I asked you the question. I probably got you into some trouble. And you said you would seriously consider Garrett Nussmeier over Cam Ward as a quarterback of the Titans. And I've done some Cam Ward breakdowns on my NFL channel, and he looks freaking incredible. Do you still feel the same way that you would consider it?
I mean, again, like, you know, obviously when I said that, we were pretty still in 2024 mode. If I look at 2024 tape as a vacuum, like Cam Ward's Miami tape and Garrett's first year as a starter, I still liked Nussmeier's tape better in that year. Now Cam Ward, he's really impressed me in the preseason. I still think he's going to be a great NFL quarterback. And I'm somebody as a draft analyst where I put pretty much all my weight in how I grade somebody is their latest season of tape. So like their last season before they go to the NFL. So this is like, you know, I could switch from, you know, being, you know, a high first round grade on Nussmeier to a fourth round grade if he has a really bad year this year. It's going to, like, I weight that very heavily. So actually somebody commented and asked that same question right before I came on the show, under my post, saying I still feel that way. Yeah. So again, before I say anything definitive, I want to see how Nussmeier finishes the rest of this season. But like, I would say he's on, after this past performance, I would say he's on track to have a higher grade than Ward did for me.
Wow. Yeah, I think Cam is so good. I really do. I didn't think I liked him as much as I did as when I sat down watching the Miami stuff. I thought it was just going to be mostly ACC mumbo jumbo kind of stuff. Yeah. I guess for me, was there any quarterback that stood out to you? I know the young Cal quarterback is like the rage now, but that's
oh
not
my goodness,
all.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you say his name? Jerron Curry Sagapuli. I'm not even.
It's just been JKS to everybody. I can't even attempt it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was pretty nasty.
He was unbelievable.
But I want to ask you about a team that LSU could potentially play down the road, who will have probably more hype than LSU if they really get this thing going, and that's Miami, because people are dying to get Miami back. Carson Beck looked good. Damn, versus Notre Dame. I've always been a Beck guy, but man, Miami's got juice. So what was your takeaway?
Yeah, I mean, as far as Beck goes, I feel like there's always, I called it the Will Levis theorem for a long time, because it was like the like difference between 2023 and 2024 Will Levis. He was 23, so 2022 and 2023, because he had the good 2022, where there's like one quarterback that is probably not the best guy in the class, but just gets really, really overhated for some reason. Like, people latch onto him as like a social media meme and just like harp on the guy for reasons that are not related to what you see on tape at all. And I kind of thought Carson Beck became that guy last season.
Yeah.
Like I didn't think he was good, but I thought he was like good backup level in the NFL. Like, I had a fourth round grade. He wasn't far off from the rest of the quarterbacks in last year's class below Cam Ward to me. And I thought you kind of saw the same Georgia Carson Beck that we did, you know, last night. I still think he's got to fix the decision-making. He really makes a lot of reckless decisions, and he doesn't have the arm talent to make up for that. But he has, like, I think the ball placement's good. I think he's a pretty good pocket manager. Like, again, I don't think the guy's a world beater, but, like, I think he could be a really solid, like, NFL backup quarterback. And I think he can be a good college quarterback. But if you really want to look at the difference maker on Miami, go look at Reuben Bain. Reuben Bain Jr., one of the best players in the country, hands down, really dominated that entire Notre Dame game by himself. That's one of the best in the country, Notre Dame offensive line. And Reuben Bain did whatever he wanted all night long. So if you want to look ahead, I'd be a lot more scared of him than anybody else on that Miami roster.
Yeah, it was good. That freshman receiver, 10, has got.
Yeah, Malachi, Malachi, what was his last name?
I don't remember.
Tony, Malachi Tony. There you go.
All right, I almost said Malachi Corley. So I like the fact that he is Malachi Corley and Kadarius Toney put together.
That gets brought up a lot. He's like the worst receiver name ever.
and he's kind of like in that same mold, but I think he's going to be better. Well, I don't know if the both of them are beasts in college. I don't know if he's going to be better, but yeah, man. Iron City Film, make sure you give him a follow. He is a PHL regular. Thank you so much sharing your expertise, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Okay? Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
There you go. Iron City Film. All right. So I thought that was interesting. He came to basically the same conclusion. And I will be honest. I overrated Cade. I did. Because when I was watching the South Carolina game, I was like, hey, we can do some of these things. You can go back and look at the hour-long film study that we did. I was like, we've got some guys that may not be to the same talent level of South Carolina. I think our secondary is better than South Carolina's defense last year. Their defensive line is probably slightly better than our defensive line. But I was like, we've got dudes. I was like, we can make this game ugly. And I want to shout out Jace Max. He clipped something from one of our live streams last week. And I said, if there was a world where LSU wins this game, I think it would most likely be in an ugly kind of style. And I said LSU winning 17-13. And of course, you know, the final score ended up being 17-10. It made me look like a genius. Jace Max, appreciate you. But the truth is, I'm fine with winning ugly. And it wasn't really ugly. It's different if you win ugly when both teams are playing bad. LSU played good. All the calls went against LSU in this game. And there was still sloppy play that was rightfully called that LSU hurt themselves with. So there you go. Now, here's what we're going to do. Next 5 to 10 minutes, I'm going to answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep it moving. I want to shout out friend of the channel, Vern Funquist, Chris Marler. You know, when something goes viral, no one ever gives a person that asks the question credit. Like, I hate it when I am watching a press conference and a question gets asked, and it's just a question that's not going to receive a good answer, or it's one that could be answered with vagueness. Chris Marler, who's been on our channel plenty of times now, LouisianaSports.net, Chris Marler goes out there and says, hey, Dabo Swinney said this about you, that you played at a grade of 68 out of 100 and Clemson graded at a 55 out of 100. Okay. And Brian Kelly shut that down. He went after Dabo Swinney, and rightfully so. Now, Dabo's full quote wasn't as bad as that. I'm just being honest. It was not as bad as that. But I like the fact that Brian Kelly took a shot. And like Trent Richardson of Alabama said about Florida State versus Alabama, there were a few instances where Alabama was on the ground defensively and a Florida State offensive lineman slowly rubbed themselves over them, dragging a particular body part over their face mask. And I'll leave that up into your imagination. Guess what we did? We were the more physical team. We were in their house where they have a crowd advantage. It's easier to hear a snap count. He's easier to communicate in all those different things. We teabagged them. That's what we did. Sometimes in life, you got to do that. Now, there was one LSU fan who one day took that a little too literal, and it cost him. But sometimes in life, you just got to do that. Theoretically. I loved it. I love the fact that we were physical. We were knocking faces off on our defensive line. Now, offensively, you know, I took some heat for what I had to say about LSU's offensive line. They were good. It's okay to not say that they were dominant. I don't think they were dominant per se. But they went in there and got the damn job done. That's all that matters. Cole Kublik, who knows offensive line way more than I ever will, said in his recap that we were pushed around a little bit. And that's true. That is what happened. but they played well, understanding the time and situation. And I give the entire LSU offensive staff, it's important to not just compliment one person, which in this case is Joe Sloan. It's important to not just compliment the quarterback or anyone. Give Alex Atkins a lot of credit. Give Brian Kelly a lot of credit. That game felt like an NFL game, if we're being honest, where the team, and if you watch enough NFL, like playoff game kind of stuff, it honestly comes down to more often than not the team that makes the fewer mistakes than the team that makes the big plays. And that's been the overarching theme of this live stream tonight. Okay. It is more important, and ask our friends, once again, this final rant brought to you by Labor Therapy, labortherapy.com. Book your appointment today. Zion Imaging, thank you so much. Zion360.com for all your wedding booth needs and Fast Draft Fantasy. Deposit match bonus up to $50. If you haven't drafted a fantasy team yet, you can draft one right now in 10 minutes or less, fastdraftfantasy.com, okay? You know, I feel as if LSU moving forward is a team when the offensive line played the way it did versus Clemson, you might get overconfident in how good that LSU offensive line actually is. But here's the truth. You can still win around it. You can still win around it. Now, why can you still win around it? Because you have a very special quarterback and you have a very special running back. The overarching theme is weak links. Just don't be so bad where we can't win the game at all. Just hold ground, hold serve, keep fighting. Weston Davis, really good example. 44 Clemson, beats him around the edge with a little cross chop, if you will. Well, it wasn't a cross chop. It was just a little chop down, if you will. What does Weston Davis do on Garrett Nussmeier's rollout throw to Kyle Parker? He chops him down. Just keep fighting. Get creative. Just find a way to get it done. That's all you got to do. That's all you got to do. And, you know, if somebody starts, and this is the thing, if somebody starts sucking, bench them. LSU was too shy to bench people last year. D. Eason, thanks for tuning in on Twitter. Appreciate you. Now, sign me up for AYS tonight. I'll be on with Blake at 7:30. You guys better be there. You don't want to miss it. My internet's going to work, hopefully. I do want to say this because I do feel this is something that's happening. I don't quite understand it. I don't live near Blake, nor our guest from last week, Chris Gordy, but people's internet connections have just been going out. YouTube connections have just been going out. All right. I take this very seriously. There's a lot of work that goes into every film study and every piece of content that I do. And for something that is out of my control to happen, I feel so bad, especially if I'm going on someone else's show, especially when I go on someone else's show after I do my show. It pisses me off, honestly. So, no, be patient. Blake texted me after his live stream, and he was midway through, and everything just shut off. It shut off on him. The whole thing just shut out. Okay, so I don't know if it's a bunch of Clemson fans in our mainframe. It's probably the same doofus who got A.J. Halsey suspended for the first half. Probably was. Okay, now, like we always do at the end of shows, I get into a few other overarching college football rants. I'm going to look directly at you, and I promise I'm going to get back into the comments. It is time for people who have an AP vote to grow a freaking spine. Grow it. This thing, it's connected to your back. It connects your ass bone to your skull. Okay? Grow one. Why is Alabama in the freaking AP poll? Why is that? Why? Why? They looked like ass. Ass. Florida State beat them by multiple possessions as a 13-point underdog. Okay? Clemson, I'm fine with them still being ranked because they played LSU, who was also a top 10 team. Florida State was unranked. Now, Florida State might win the national championship and whatever. But at least Clemson did some good things. Alabama looked like they never played college football before. They had guys loafing. Like we said a minute ago, Trent Richardson calling out his own players for getting teabagged. And Alabama is not only still in the AP poll, they're comfortably in it. Quit sucking up to that stupid letter A with the mullet. Nobody likes that logo anyway. Stop it. Why is Alabama in the AP poll? Why? Why? We've already seen it. They're terrible. They are terrible. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. I'm so sick of it. There was only one thing that Alabama did, one thing from the Nick Saban era that they were able to do versus Florida State, and that was miss a field goal. That's it. That's it. I'm so sick of it. I'm so sick of it. Stop it. They don't need to be in the poll. They don't need to be in the poll. God, why? They're 21st. 21st. There's no point. There's absolutely no point. So, dude. And they already got odds up for the next Alabama coach, and Tommy Rees is a favorite. Oh, my God, if they hire Tommy Rees. LSU's plan for Peter Woods was so good. It was so, so, so good. So I want to show you this run, and we've already broken it down, but you get the end zone copy here. Okay, so I want you to look at this. All right. I should just save this for a Patreon breakdown. Okay, so watch this play right here. Okay, so Peter Woods, look at this, just throws Josh Thompson off of him. Okay, so what does LSU do the next time? Okay, Josh Thompson is one-on-one versus Peter Woods. You see him right there, number 11. Josh gets thrown off again. Once again, that's just an NFL player. But we got Caleb Jackson right here, and that's honestly not Caleb's man in this run blocking scheme, but Caleb just picks him up. Boom. Okay, and while that's not the best block, he got enough for Xavion to get through there. Okay, and then that's just hard to deal with, y'all. I mean, it doesn't look good for our guys, but that's what Glenn Dorsey for youngins. That's what Glenn Dorsey would do to people every game. Michigan versus Oklahoma is going to be a good game. Yeah, I agree with you on that. I really do. It will be a legendary game. How about that? Alexander's betting USF 17.5 in a look ahead spot. That hook, be careful with the hook. In college football, if you're getting the hook, normally the opposite play, they're begging you to take USF because us, Alexander, you might be a sharp bettor. Us novice bettors should be like, oh, okay, we got a little mullet here to deal with. Love to see it. Ooh. What a day. All right, y'all. I will be on with Mr. Rufino here in just a moment. I'm about to go. Let's see. This might actually still be going on. I released a 4-hour Jaden Daniels NFL film study today. And yeah, so there's still about like 40 minutes left. If you want to go to Power Hour NFL and watch it, you go for it. We'll talk to you soon. Okay. Once again, big thanks to our friends at Labor Therapy, labortherapy.com. They have, they're locked in for the rest of the football season. Really excited about that. And yeah, 5 different locations in the Lafayette region. Zion Imaging, XYAN Imaging. Please go support them. Okay. NS Power Hour LSU. Boom! Tonight. Well, actually, I'll answer this from Marvis. Carter Nuss threw 2 pickable balls. Sideline throws to Sharpen Thomas. Does that concern you? Yeah, there were a few throws. I mean, there was one where he threw to Aaron in the red zone that probably shouldn't be thrown. And then the sharp sideline ball, that's just a major weakness he has when that edge player off the end just backs out into coverage and Nuss predetermines that he's going to throw the quick out. Quick outs are a weakness of his, right? There are throws that he feels he can get away with, and those are oftentimes some of the most dangerous ones, right? Because if you throw an interceptable ball over the middle, there's a lot of traffic that you have to deal with. If you throw it to the sideline, you know, those big offensive linemen are probably not going to chase him down. So there you go. Tonight, we are doing enchiladas. Let's go. Let's go.